So tonight, verse 40. Return is the movement of the Tao. Yielding is the way of the Tao. All things are born of being. Being is born of non-being. Return is the movement of the Tao. Yielding is the way of the Tao. All things are born of being. Being is born of non-being. Now let me put it upside down. Being is born of non-being. All things are born of being. Yielding is the way of Tao. Return is the movement of the Tao. It's so simple. And in some ways, I found it the most tricky to penetrate. Let me start with the top. Return is the movement of the Tao. When we understand that the Tao is very much the circular motion of this life, the life-death-life cycle, right, the great round wheel of time and life, then return as the movement of the Tao makes a lot of sense. And yielding is the way of the Tao. If you think about the Tao is the force of life, as the force of life, the life, death, life cycle, always changing, always becoming something new. Yielding to that motion, that spiraling motion, is really the only way to live. Because when we don't yield to it, we're fighting it. Otherwise known as going against the flow. And we can understand that in the most simple way. We have the experience of going against the flow any number of times in any given day. And you can see how, at a more subtle level on the inside, we often go against the flow of what we might call the voice of truth, which happens to be conflicting with the voice of should. And when we let those voices lead us, as opposed to that deep pulsation, the deep, true voice of the lower depths of our being, we're going against the so-called flow. We move against the Tao. If we experience the Tao as that pulsation of absolute yesness inside of us. So again, the life of mastery is the life that's always moving into that yielding into the so-called Tao. In the language of this class, we could call it the self. And again, yielding into the impulse towards our own truth with a capital T. And somehow, as we align with that voice, we're aligning with a much greater flow outside of us as well. So the first two lines, I think, are fairly simple, fairly straightforward. All things are born of being. Again, if you think of being as the pulsating ground of life, you can see how all things are born and rise up out of that. All things are born of being. But being is born of non-being. You know, what is non-being? And if being is the pulsating ground from which everything arises, theoretically, it should also be the source, right? I must confess that until I read this verse, I've always, in my mind, equated being with the source. I've often used the metaphor as the womb, the great womb of being. Reading this verse, I started to think, well, actually, no. Because being is still something. And as long as we have something, then we have nothing. Right? We have being, we have doing. We have something, we have nothing. These are all dualities. Our old friend, duality, from way back, verses and verses and verses ago. And so I came to understand, as I was sitting with this verse, non-being is the absolute, pure, non-dual void. No words for it. Which is what got me thinking we had to chant Dhammavati tonight. My old friend Dhammavati, who, for those of you who are not familiar with the Hindu tradition, one of the teachings within the great universe of Hinduism, there's a teaching about the ten wisdom goddesses, they're called, and one of them is Dhammavati. And Dhammavati is the void. Dhammavati is the nothingness of non-being. And without Dhammavati, that's the beginning, beginning, beginning. The beginning with no beginning. One can't really speak about it because there are no words. And when I went hunting around for other readings, the philosophical pairings for this verse were so technical, it just didn't strike me as appropriate to even bring into class. And I found myself fascinated by the four lines. Why is this verse number 40, 40, only four lines? And it got me thinking about the significance of the number four, which a million years ago, I was training with some musicians, many, many, many years ago, probably 40 years ago, and one of them was a numerology person. I'll never forget this. He talked about, at the four comes the change, which you see in music. A lot of music is divided up into four beat parts, eight beat parts. It's often a four, divisive by four situation. But even more, at the four comes the change. I began to see, that's right, if I started any kind of a discipline, a meditation discipline, or an asana, or a chanting, or exercise, whatever, I would always notice, if I could maintain for 4 days, I was home free. It would continue. It was like it took 4 days to get stabilized, and then I was good to go. And so I've always thought there's some wisdom in this notion that at the four comes the change. And of course, if you think of a square, the four sides of a square, and then it's closed, so then you would start another one. So there is very much something about 1, 2, 3, 4, and then the new beginning. So I think from that we can begin to play with the notion of four as a magic number, or a sacred number, or a highly charged number. And that got me thinking about, again, in Hinduism, there are two very important teachings that work with fours. One is the bodies, the four bodies, and the other is the four levels of sound. And I began to see that each one of these lines actually correlates with one of those levels. So if we're looking at the four bodies in the yogic system, there's the physical body, which is this one that we touch. There's the subtle body, or the inner body. The yogic term is the subtle body. This is where the chakras are. And the subtle body is the energy body. It's the body we don't We can't touch it. We sense it. Some of us, as we develop more and more inner powers, we can begin to actually discern the subtle body. But most of us are pretty dense. And it's all we can do to notice the physical. But the subtle body is where your thoughts are, emotion, memory, unconscious. It's a vast and incredible body of consciousness and unconsciousness, both. And that's the subtle body. And then deeper than the subtle body is what yogis call the causal body, and that's the body of deep sleep. The causal body is a very interesting body. When we go there, no matter what's going on in our daily life, once we enter into that causal body, that sleep body, that deep sleep body, we're completely refreshed, completely regenerated. And then the fourth body, the supercausal, or what's sometimes called the turiya state, that's the body that holds the seed of pure consciousness. That's the body we go to in samadhi states. That's the body of what we might call the enlightenment state. And that's called the supercausal. So, and that's the non-being. Return is the movement of the Tao. That's very much a corollary to the physical. Think about it. It's movement. It's return. There's a certain kind of action and physicality. And return is the movement of the Tao. Yielding is the way. When we're yielding, we're already a little bit more inside. We're a little bit more subtle. Right? Return has more, it's more proactive. It's more of a forward movement, in this case, spiral movement. But it's very much of the so-called first body, the physical body, yielding. We have to be a little bit deeper in to be able to yield. Right? Yielding is the way that all things are born of being. And the being that all things are born of is very, very much a corollary of that causal state of deep sleep, that resting state that everything is born of. And then being is born of non-being. That's Yaktorya, non-being. Dumavati, that's the deep, 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 deep. We get it again if we look at the teachings, the levels, the four levels of sound. Hinduism talks about the pada level of sound, which is again the deep, deep, deep. That's the non-being. There's not really sound there. It's before the sound, that's dhammavati. And it moves up, I forget the technical names, but I think the next one is madhyama, which is the in the navel, Manipura chakra. And the impulse of sound, it starts from pure nothing, and it moves up, and it begins to take some shape. And as it moves into this madhyama level. And that moves up to the heart, which is pashyanti. And finally, vaikari up into the throat and out of sound. And again, those four levels, that's why I think it's fun to read this verse forwards or backwards to get the movement inside yourself through the four levels of sound or the four bodies. Four bodies I tend to experience going down. Four levels of sound I tend to experience going on. So it's a very, very interesting verse. And the thing about this verse is it's offering us a great secret about life. It's really offering us the mastery, the key to this life, which is making friends with non-being. You want to really think about this. You know, this is a verse that is so much about the, is this a word, verticality, the vertical movement of consciousness. You know, most of us in our lives, we're completely on the horizontal. Just all, you know, the to-do list, the errands, the da-da-da-da-da. It's fine, but we tend to live at a superficial level of our potential, of our being. Because honestly, on one level, who has time, especially in this life? From the minute we're up in the morning, we're doing this and doing that, and I forgot this, I forgot that, oh my God. And then at a certain moment, if we've been doing sadhana, we remember, oh my God, I've been in my head for like the last 14 hours. Let me just have a moment. Let me just breathe. Let me just breathe 10 deep breaths, even that. This verse, I think, is very much pointing to find the vertical depth inside yourself. And this is what all the wisdom traditions are telling us over and over again. It's right here, inside of you. And all you need to do is open into it, and the depth will catch you deeper and deeper and deeper down. And whereas in my own process until I read this verse, it's a lot of years. 30 plus years I've been sitting with a notion of being that has been completely bashed up this week. Quite fascinating. But I come to see that non-being is where we want to open into. Now in Buddhism they call that shunyata. Sometimes we just call it the void. And it's not that I haven't read about this notion, thought about this notion, but somehow reading this verse, it broke open inside me. And I saw in my own meditation process, I kept riding this projectile down, 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 down through being into the non-being place. And in that place, we touch absolute rejuvenation. In that place, we touch everything that we might require in any given moment. All things are born of being. Being is born of non-being. The verse is suggesting that we keep opening into the lower and lower depths of our being in this downward movement, opening into what the text is calling non-being. And again, we can call it the void, we can call it shunyata, we can call it dhammavati, we can call it pure silence. It doesn't really matter how we call it. We say this again and again, but what we want is to keep opening into it. And some of you may be thinking, well, come on, Susan, you've been saying this for years. And it's true, I have been. But somehow, a more subtle level broke open for me as I've been looking at this verse. And I hope the same for you. It confirms everything I have experienced and thought about and read about when we talk about working with mantra and repetition and how repetition is such a powerful practice because it pulls us down, 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 down. When we keep changing, we tend to be at that more horizontal, superficial layer because it keeps changing. Whereas when we're repeating the same, in this case, mantra over and over and over again, we can get lost in the mind. And certainly, any number of us do. Some of us, even when we're chanting, sometimes I look around and people aren't even chanting, they're just sort of doing other things. But there's always the possibility to take the practice and keep taking it deeper, deeper, deeper inside. And as we do that, there's always the possibility that we're going to enter into that magical, wondrous, profound state that this text is calling non-being. And that's the place where all the answers are. That's the place where everything we seek is just sitting in its primordial, pre-manifested state. And it's its most powerful in that state. And we can recreate. If you think about it, it's very profound. If you think about the power of creation, And by penetrating into your own center of non-being, you are touching the power to recreate yourself. Think about it. If you contain the power of creation inside of yourself, and that power is often subjugated, distracted from, sabotaged, etc., by movements of wounded self, mind, storyline, etc. And so many of us live our lives trapped in the story, generally trapped in the bad story, trapped in the bad history, trapped in the whatever. We really don't have to live there. And as we penetrate down, 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 making that movement towards non-being, we begin to touch the power, the real power of creation. And that's where everything is made again. You know, so many of you who've been with me a long time have heard me rail against words like intention. I always have a reaction when people talk about setting an intention, because I always figure your intention came from your wounded self anyway. It's just going to lead you down a path you'll be sorry for. But as we move into the primordial place of non-being, that's where we touch real possibility. That's where we touch the real power of change, the real power of healing. That's where, oh no, it was the Rumi, which I don't have with me, but the Rumi from last week, where Rumi talks about finding the healing in the wound. Those are not the words Rumi uses, but it's that notion. It's an old alchemical notion that healing is found in the blood of the wound, they say. And it's so true. As we move into being, non-being, I'm sorry, everything, as we move into non-being, everything is there. It's a mystery.